Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Now one may think or doubt that because Krishna was friend of Arjuna, Arjuna was telling him all this by way of flattery. But Arjuna, just to drive out this kind of doubt from the minds of the readers of Bhagavad Gita, substantiates these praises in the next verse when he says that Krishna is accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not only by himself, but by authorities like Narada, Asita, Devala, and Vyasadeva. These are great personalities who distribute the Vedic knowledge as it is, and they are accepted by all acharyas. Therefore, Arjuna tells Krishna that he accepts whatever he says to be completely perfect. Sarvam etad ritam manye. I accept everything you say to be true. Arjuna also says that the personality of Godhead is very difficult to understand and that he cannot be known even by the great demigods. This means that the Lord cannot even be known by personalities greater than human beings. So how can a human being understand Lord Krishna without becoming his devotee? Right? So this is then very much establishing this point is that one has to accept the Lord. One has to accept that, how you say, someone who's practicing like a devotee, like Arjuna, they will understand it, and that it's only in this mood of devotion that it can be understood, right? So without being a devotee, the Gita will not be accessible, because it is the science of relationship with Godhead, and that relationship is based on devotion, is based on devotional service. It's not, doesn't have anything else. Now here he accepts, I accept everything you say to be true. Now he had further questions, right? Because this here then is in the 10th chapter. So we still have 8 more chapters to go. So he's bringing out all this that he accepts it what is true, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All these other great personalities, they accept. They also teach the same thing. So, therefore, he accepts that. So that's very important, is that if one's accepted it in this mood of devotion, right, accepting that Krishna, being God, knows what he's talking about, right, then you'll actually understand it. But if we doubt, we think God doesn't actually know what he's talking about, because it's Kali Yuga, you know, how do things like this work in this age, right? So what would that mean? What would that mean? If we say that, what religion are we talking about? What religion's basis are we talking about?
Zoroastrianism.
Yeah, something coming down derivative of Zoroastrianism. Because that means God's created something, Kali Yuga, that he has no control over, and something that his instructions and his laws don't work. Right? So we don't find that in the Vedic literature. We don't find that in Vaishnavism. That's only in those religions coming down from Zoroaster. That was his philosophy. Because of this philosophy, that's what got him kicked out of India by Vashishta. Because he had these kind of understandings. So Vishishta, it's mentioned in the Rig Veda, kicked him out of India. And he started his own religion over in Iran. Right? And then from that you get the derivatives, then Judaism comes up, and then based on that, Christianity, Islam. So they all have this same principle. Right? The same kind of principle. So this is the problem. So Arjuna is not like that. He says, I accept everything you say to be true, but he has doubts how to apply it, how to understand it. So he asks about that. He doesn't doubt that it works. So therefore, how can you tell the difference between that kind of doubting and other doubting, where you don't actually accept? Because you could say, one could say, no, we're just checking this so that everybody is on the same page, so that whatever is disturbing to everybody, then, you know, that is discussed and brought out and brought into the public so it can be aired and everybody can be comfortable. What's the difference between that and what Arjuna said?
The spirit, his mood.
The spirit, the mood. Because here Arjuna wants to understand how to apply it. His questions are understanding it to apply it. Not to find out what are the doubts and what disturbs everybody. Right? Because that can go on unlimitedly, right? Living entities are in this material world because they have a problem with serving God. That's why they're here. Like that. If anybody ever wondered. Like that. But that's the reason they're here. So that means everybody will have a doubt about something. Right? So, like that, you could go on eternally just dealing with doubts. Now, what would be the benefit of dealing with all those doubts like that? What benefit would anyone get? Because you're not practically applying the philosophy. Maybe. That's on one level. Okay. Let's take it more on the
pragmatic level.
Or on the social level. More doubts?
Doubts will be clarified.
Doubts? No, they'll never be clarified because they don't want to clarify the doubts. They just want to discuss. So in other words, it's an emotional expression. One is just...
They'll have a doubter sangha.
Yes, doubter sangha. So they're trying to create a mood of, you know, I have these feelings, and so to air it. Okay? Now, which varna, their occupation... is airing their emotions through some medium. Right? Artist. So this just happens to be the art of conversation, that's all. So it's not actually a theosophical discussion. It's actually just a conversation, a pleasant conversation to bring out one's personal feelings and to air it so others can also express theirs, because the form is on doubt. You understand? Yes. Yes, it becomes an excuse not to apply it. But a doubt is supposed to be cleared, right? That's what your Panchanga Nyaya does. Your five angas of Nyaya is you have your thesis, right? Now somebody else has a doubt. Why? Because they have a different thesis, right? So now the process is that not to just discuss the doubt. Is to establish what is the correct siddhanta, what is the correct theory. So you presented your theory and your reason. Someone else has a doubt about it. They'll present their theory. There's no such thing as just discussing doubt. They have to come up with a theory. Otherwise, what's the meaning of just discussing doubt? What does it do other than feelings? You have to have a theory. Then you discuss the two theories. Right? And then one of them will prevail because it is a greater, if they're real, the greater theory, it more encompassing than the other one. So the other one gets absorbed in it. Does that make sense? So that's your synthesis. And then the conclusion then is the practical, you know, understanding. In other words, therefore, this first part, that your thesis is established because you can see all its applications. You can see how it applies. So anything that was there in the way of anuman, or what was inferred, has been proven. Right? Just like you could say, you know, God is eternal, you know, his energies are eternal, his laws, therefore, are eternal. This material nature being one of his energies is therefore working under his laws. So it doesn't matter what yuga it is, God's laws always apply. Therefore, that means Varnashram, which is his laws for human society, will also apply in Kali Yuga. Right? But our thesis is God's laws always apply. But then the other person's thesis is no, but it's Kali Yuga. They don't apply. So then you have to show how they always apply. Then you establish at the end, no, that every Yuga flies. Therefore, even in Kali Yuga, they apply. It still works. Right? But because people don't have the quality to function outside of devotional service in any, you know, how you say, humanoid fashion generally, therefore, then it's only Daivavarnashram is what's recommended. Right? It's all that's recommended in the other yuga also, but because of the external vision of the living entity and his material desire, he gets distracted and just deals with Daivavarnashram in an ordinary way. Right? So therefore it becomes just Varnashram. Like that. That makes sense? Asuric Varnashram. Now, Asuric here doesn't mean you have big teeth and horns in your head. Asuric means it's not connected to God. Right? It's a very simple, straightforward definition. Okay? Does that make sense? So, Daiva means it's connected to God. Asuric means it's not connected to God. Right? So, since it's coming from God, it's supposed to be connected to God. Therefore, then, that's his purpose. Therefore, we can just say Varnashram, and that's what it means. If you want to be more specific, then we say Daiva. But if you're thinking Varnashram, not connected to God, that's where your doubts are coming up. That's because you're studying Asuric Varnashram. Right? Because otherwise, you would be able to see how it connects to God, right? Does that make sense? So, here is Arjuna's accepting. Then based on that, then he can work on application. But unless he accepts, how will he apply? Right? And so we see is that after finishing the Gita, he cleared his doubts and he is able to apply it. And immediately, as soon as the conversation's finished, he started fighting. Right? So it's very, very practical. Right? So then the next point, this final point in the spirit of Gita. Therefore, Bhagavad Gita should be taken up in a spirit of devotion, you know, as a devotee of Lord Krishna. One should not think that he is equal to Krishna, nor should he think that Krishna is an ordinary personality, or even a great personality. Lord Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead. So according to the statements of Bhagavad Gita or the statements of Arjuna, the person who is trying to understand the Bhagavad Gita, we should at least theoretically accept Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And with that submissive spirit, we can understand the Bhagavad Gita. Unless one reads the Bhagavad Gita in a submissive spirit and with oral reception, it is very difficult to understand Bhagavad Gita because it is a great mystery. Right? So now he summed up this whole section on the spirit. So you have to accept. So even if it's just theoretically, right? So even if you want to discuss anything in the Vedic, if it doesn't make sense to you, but the point is if it's given by the authorities, then it must be accepted, like Arjuna did, even if theoretically. Right? Even if it doesn't understand, we accept, okay, accept here that, you know, the Varnashram is I don't understand it. I've seen many examples. I hear so much in history where it's been misapplied. But Krishna's saying, Prabhupada's saying, the authorities are saying, so therefore, accepting it, you know, in theory, so how would we apply it? Right? You ever heard that question? Like that? I hardly do. I've been talking about Varnashram the last 20 years. I hardly once a year, twice a year, maximum if somebody asks me actually how to apply it or use it. You know what I'm saying? So if you're hearing it, that means you're doing better than I am. Because I hardly ever hear it. It's just, you know, yes and this and that. People may apply it in their own lives, but as the thing, it's not something that's seen. That's not the discussions on Varna aren't on how to practically apply it. You know, from the principle it must be applied, so how does that work? You know, and then seeing what practically works, rather than, generally it's more of a, does that make sense that I would accept Varnashram, rather than, okay, well, does that make sense on how to apply it in the situation? You understand? So, because Gita is to be applied, therefore that's there. Okay. Now the second part is the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. Okay. Okay, here. Everyone is full of anxiety because of this material existence. The cause of suffering and the actual destination of life are proper subjects for inquiry. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to answer these queries and to make Arjuna understand his position, thus relieving him from all miseries. With the overwhelming need for spiritual knowledge clearly established, Srila Prabhupada outlines the contents of the Gita, which can be summarized as follows. Okay, that's the next thing, the subject matter. So now there's the spirit of it and then the need for it, because without the need for it, why will anybody be interested? Right? Because here is, even though we're taking here the purpose of the Gita that's within Sambandha, still there must be, this is within the Prayojana aspect of Sambandha. Right? Not your ultimate goal. Your goal is the results of understanding by going back to Godhead. But in other words, if I'm going to engage myself in Sambandha Gyan, to actually make the endeavor to learn about it, I have to actually see the use of it. Right? In other words, I only do something if I see, have the need for it. Right? So to have the need for it, there has to be an awareness of the subject matter itself. Right? So being aware of the subject matter, I have to have a need, then I'll make the endeavor to actually try to learn it. Otherwise, I'll just hear something nice, and then that's it, finished. So within Sambandha Gyan, to establish the importance of it, that it must be something there. Therefore, then you give the spirit which you can approach it, and then you have to establish the need for it. Right? Then, with that, then you can go about then studying the subject matter. Right? Then the subject matter is there. Then the next will come. The fourth is the processes for understanding. So you have the subject matter. Now how to use that. That will then give you the result. Right? And so these processes, understanding, then you can go with the sixth point, which is how to practically apply this knowledge and get the result, like Arjuna. Right? So first you establish that knowledge, so unless you have the interest in it, unless you know it exists, there's no question of developing an interest. Unless there's an interest in it, it's come for, you see this is important, you won't endeavor for it. Once you have it, right, this knowledge, then you have to understand how it works and what would be the mechanics of, you know, contemplating it and trying to use it. Then, seeing the goal that you can get from that, then you'll actually apply it. You understand? Once you've gotten Sambandha Gyan, gone through the stages of thinking, feeling, and willing, right? Thinking means, you know, a knowledge of the field and attraction to it. Feeling means you need it. Willing means you actually make the endeavor, right? So once you've done that within Sambandha Gyan, then that becomes the basis for then understanding and appreciating and needing the result of going back to Godhead. Therefore, you will try to apply the knowledge. You understand? It's the same cycle, same pattern. That's the nice thing about the Vedic literatures, is the patterns are the same. It's just a matter of being able to identify how that pattern works. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. A minute, it goes by the same process that an hour goes by, or a day goes by, or a fortnight, or it's all the same thing. The time is the primary element. Works in the same fashion. But it's just applied on so many levels. So if someone was talking about a year, and someone else was talking about a day, and they were saying, oh, they have nothing to do with each other, then you might find that strange. But externally, what are they don't seem to have much of a match. Or if you're talking about a yuga, right? Or the time according to an atom. But these are details of one thing, time. You know, or a day, and then you get old. That's also time. Right? You die, you're born. This is time. But we may not see who they have any connection. So, that's the whole point, is that, but they all do. And that's a broad variety of subject matter. You know? That's all based on time. So the same way the Vedic literature is based on these simple formulas. But you have to be, but it's very sophisticated in applying it. It has so many manifestations. Right? One of Krishna's qualities is he does one thing, but accomplishes many, many things. Right? So that means any of his qualities will accomplish many, many, forms or details or situations. Let me think. Like, how many things can you think of if we take Krishna's quality of strength? How many things have strength in them? Right? You can apply it everywhere, or wealth, or beauty, knowledge, right? Renunciation, right? Fame. There's so many applications. So his six qualities are in everything. You can find these six qualities everywhere. Why? Because he is everywhere. So why would you find these everywhere? Because he's entered everything. Therefore, everything has some aspect of these qualities. Right? Some aspect, some combination. That's why you can find it. So if he's creating everything, he's creating it according to his own will, which is not different from himself. That means the mechanics of how something works is not different from Krishna, because he created it. Modern man didn't create it. He may think he did, but he still has to base it on God's laws. Right? Just like you have your nice, 12-cylinder, Mercedes, engine. Okay? Now, one may say, man has made this. But in one sense, did he actually make it, or he was just the instrument? Because can you just put anything you want in there? You come back from the hospital, you visited your old grandmother, you do that every week. And, you have a, she gave you, out of her affection, her bowl of green Jell-O. You don't know what to do with it, so you could throw it in the gas tank, right? Isn't it? No, you can't. So you have to follow the rules. What are they burning? Petrol. What is petrol made out of? Oil. What do they burn in lamps? Oil. Who made up that law? You understand? Mercedes? Benz? Brahma. Okay, yeah. So it's made by Krishna. Oil burns. You understand? So that's the thing, is all these things are based on his laws. Otherwise it won't work. If it was simply man-made, then whatever man thought of, he'd go to, apply it, it'd work. Right? But they don't. They have to spend a lot of time to make it work. So what's happening? Like, what is called that guy, Dyson? Isn't Dyson the what do you call it? The new Hoovers. You Hoover your carpet with the Dyson, right? It was over 5,000 prototypes before he actually got the one that worked. So what was actually happening here, if you look at it in actuality? Yeah, he was looking for the principle, the laws on which it could function. Because it has to work on nature's laws. So he had an idea that had something connected. He, by observing the nature, he saw some kind of principles that worked, some kind of formulas. He went to try it, but it didn't work. So after 5,000 attempts like that, then he had something that worked. You understand? That's what's going on. Right? How do they do cancer research? They start off with that green Jell-O, give that to it, see if it gets better or worse, right? Like that. And so they start somewhere and start with this, start with that, and they observe something. Oh, maybe it's this. But what are they observing? Themselves or something already existing? So who's created the already existing? Right? That's the point. So this is the false ego of man. He thinks he's doing something separate. And because of that, that's illusion. So that formula that there's something separate from God, no matter how you apply it, will generate illusion. Right? That's how we define illusion. Something not connected to Krishna. That's it. That's the simple form of illusion. Yeah, because they're seeing patterns. The scientists, or like Einstein had said that there'd be certain parts of atoms that they would find. They didn't find them until, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years later. But he gave the formulas how they would act. You know, they just didn't know how to get at them. So the whole point is they're observing God's creation. Right? That's what's going on. So if we think that there's something functioning outside of God's creation that doesn't work like that, that's illusion. It's the same formula. So whether we think, oh, we're devotees, you know, rules don't apply to us, or, you know, we're different, we're Westerners, it doesn't apply to us, or it's Kali Yuga, it doesn't apply to us, or we're just being practical, Prabhu, we're not fanatic, so therefore we don't apply these things to us. It's the same formula, just different manifestations. It's the same formula. The same formula of illusion means disconnect something from Krishna and therefore generate illusion. Because nothing is disconnected from Krishna. Right? Does this make sense? Right? So, therefore one has to have that, with that spirit, one can then, you know, get an understanding of Gita. And with that, with understanding how that this can benefit your life, it can remove all the problems, all the miseries, this and that. All the different problems that are there can be removed by this knowledge. Then one will endeavor to understand and apply rather than spend one's time trying to figure out how to get out of it. Right? I mean, that's what kids do. Remember back, you know, what does the 8-year-old do when, you know, it's time to go, you know, sweep the, you know, rake the lawn, or, you know, pick up his room, or, right? They like to make excuses. They want to put it off for later. They want to, you know, something else is more important. So what will happen? Right? They have an hour, right? And in this hour, they could clean their room for 5 minutes and play for 55. What will they do? They'll procrastinate for 55 minutes and then finally do the work in 5 minutes. And then even then, don't do a good job, right? So it doesn't work. So this mentality of always putting it off. One has to remember is just because one is, you know, in a, you know, more mature body doesn't mean that one's mentality has changed. You know what I'm saying?
It's more of ignorance, right? Procrastination.
Procrastination is a mode of ignorance, attachment. The main basis is attachment. You know, so there is also some passion there. Like that. But the identification with that is ignorance. So you understand what I'm saying? So the question comes, I've always asked, you know, because working with kids, working with adults, are kids small adults or are adults big kids? Like this. And depending upon the situation, you can get one or the other, right? You know, Madhvacharya at 12 taking sannyasa, Shankaracharya at 6, then you can understand they're small adults, right? You know. But then those who try to avoid the Vedic conclusions, coming up with all kinds of ideas, then why would they do that when they're devotees? I'll leave you to fill in the dots. Okay. Just what is the Bhagavad Gita? Right? The purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to deliver mankind from the nescience of material existence. Right, so that's what is it, to deliver you from material existence and to establish you in Krishna consciousness, right? Every man is in difficulty in so many ways, as Arjuna also was in difficulty in having to fight the battle of Kurukshetra. Right? So that's why it's this battle, so that no one can say, oh, I have more practical problems than he had. Right? You can't, that means he's on a battlefield with all of his family members. Right? So that's pretty bad. You know, even soap operas, it's very rare they'll get it where everybody in the soap opera is at war, right? Generally, it's this one, and then they make up, then that one, and they make up, and this, you know, like this. No, this is everybody at once, right? So that situation, you know, how often does that come up? So he was able to understand this and apply it in the situation. So being in that situation, he could understand it. Not, oh, I can't, now I'm too disturbed. No. In this, that's what it's for, to work out that difficulty, to free you from that. That's what it's for. That's what it does. So it can free you from this. Then, why? Because those things are making you forget Krishna. Gita can resolve that problem. You will stop forgetting Krishna. Right? Then we can get the practical thing of going back to Godhead, right? Always remembering Krishna. But if we're always forgetting Him, how do we remember Him? So in these situations that are so difficult, we forget Krishna. So this is how to not forget Krishna in those difficult situations. So if it works in the difficult situations, how much nicer it works when it's a good day, right? You know, the sun's shining and the butterflies are, you know, butterflying and all those kind of things like that, you know. What is, the sun is shining. What's the moon doing?
Moon.
No, what's the moon doing? Okay. The moon is rising. Okay, that's right. Okay. Arjuna surrendered unto Sri Krishna, and consequently this Bhagavad Gita was spoken. Not only Arjuna, but every one of us is full of anxieties because of our material existence. Our very existence is in the atmosphere of non-existence. Actually, we are not meant to be threatened by non-existence. And we are not non-existent. Our existence is eternal, but somehow or another we are put into asat. Asat refers to that which does not exist. So this is the problem, is that the living entity thinks he won't exist. That's what fear is. But now, what is the state of non-existence? Because the jiva exists, he always exists. So why would he be worried about a state of non-existence if he's eternal? There's an atmosphere of non-existence. What exactly is that atmosphere of non-existence?
Delusion.
Delusion, right? In other words, you're in illusion about something. So you're worried that illusion will go away.
Because it does.
That's another thing. I mean, it's always changing, but it means the illusion remains, but yes, the particular aspects of the illusion. So the illusion itself, I mean, being in illusion, that's the state of non-existence. And being situated in transcendental knowledge, that's the state of actual existence. So the solution to any problem is to function in an environment of existence, not in an environment of non-existence. Right? Because the non-existence always changes. That means whatever situation you are in, good or bad, it will change. But that's the thing of like the Taoists, in their observation of the material world, they basically come up with two points. Right? And everything else is a detail of these two points. So in the I Ching, then it establishes that if it's good, nice, but don't get too enthusiastic, because with time it will go bad. And if it's bad, don't become too depressed, because it won't remain that way. With time it will become good. Everything else is the detail of these two. You know? That's what the book's explaining. That make sense?
That's
yes.
Like,
who explains? The I Ching, whatever you call it. I Ching.
It's called the Book of Changes.
The Book of Changes, yeah. So if it's good, it goes to bad. Bad goes to good. You know? So the masculine and the feminine principles, the chi and the li, like that. Like that. But like these other, how you say, six systems of philosophy, they only understand their observation only goes up to a particular point. So they're only able to understand that there's an energy that makes there's a principle on which everything's based. Then there's the energy that accomplishes that principle. Then there's the gross form. So they're understanding that aspect of the Brahman level, but they don't actually understand who that is. Right? So the Li will be the masculine, the Chi will be the feminine. So that whole thing of masculine and feminine interaction is there. So that part of it's the same as our philosophy, but they don't understand how that works, how Krishna is it's him and his energies. Like that. So and they see the material world's temporary, it's always changing. It's bad, it'll become good, it's good, it'll become bad. Of course, you know, you don't want to get stuck with bad periods too long, you know. So in any case, people see these things. But because they are unable to connect it to Krishna, still this state, even though it's very intelligent, is still an illusion. And you're still going to lose something. So that fear then remains. So out of so many human beings who are suffering, there are a few who are actually inquiring about their position, as to what they are, why they are put into this awkward position, and so on. Unless one is awakened to this position of questioning his suffering, unless he realizes that he doesn't want suffering, but rather wants to make a solution to all suffering. You know, in other words, he thinks, I have tried to make a solution of all these sufferings, but I have failed. Then one is not to be considered a perfect human being. Humanity begins when this sort of inquiry is awakened in one's mind. In the Brahma Sutra, this inquiry is called Brahma Jigyasa. Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Every activity of the human being is to be considered a failure without his without having this inquiring in his mind. Right? Unless he inquires about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Therefore, those who begin to question what I am, why they are suffering, or where they came from, and where they will go after death, they are proper students for understanding Bhagavad Gita. And he must be Shraddhavan, he must have faith. The sincere student should have a firm respect, or it's a fond respect for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, such a student was Arjuna. So again, reiterating this point is that in the purpose, then you can remove all sufferings, but that still is going to come from the same process of having that spirit and then trying to understand. So unless we're inquiring, unless we can't make the problems go away unless we inquire why are they there in the first place. Right? Not I don't like these and, you know, why is it here and why is this happening to me? Just simply meaning it's an emotional outburst that you simply want somebody to fix it. No, it's a matter of actually why are these going on? Because nothing's going to happen. And, you know, in this world, unless it's coming from our own endeavor, our own karma. Unless, if we've made the endeavor, it will come. If we haven't made the endeavor, why it should come? Right? We can say, well, I'm doing nothing now, and, you know, I was just standing there, you know, I didn't ask the Mack truck to, you know, mount the curb and run me over. You know, like that. But, whatever it is, from some previous activity, this has happened in the past. There's still Mack trucks, right? Yeah? Okay,
then,
just to make sure.
We argue, but I didn't ask for Mack. You know, like
you wanted a PC to run you over? Or what? Come on. You know, it's like this. The great sages. I mean, the great kshatriyas and all that. They go to war. So they wouldn't want to be defeated, but if they were defeated by someone greater, then they didn't mind. You know, that's why the samsaptikas. You know, then they make the vow that they're going to go out and they're going to come back either victorious or dead, one or the other. And so they pick Arjuna. And so if they're going to die, then better at the hands of somebody great. Right? Like that. Isn't that? So now you want to rethink your question.
No, my question was, I'm really not following. But I mean, one may argue, like an atheist or somebody will argue against this point of karma, that, or that it comes through our desire, that, you know why, because we know you did something wrong and then you deserve the truck, right?
He did something wrong, that, but they're connected. What you've done is connected to the truck. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Then they would say, I never asked for it. You know, it's like we get what we just, we get what we
You didn't ask for it, but that's only because you don't remember. You know, somebody's memory resets every 5 minutes, and if you order lunch at a restaurant and it comes after 20 minutes, you'll say, I didn't order this.
But nobody orders a truck to ride home.
Of course you do. Sorry? By your action, it's just like this. Does the thief want to be in jail?
No.
No. What was his purpose of stealing?
To get money.
To get money, to enhance his opulence. But when you steal, then what goes along with stealing? Going to jail. Right? So therefore, there's something that you've done that, you know, the truck comes along with it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, but if you're uncomfortable with the Mac, we'll have you run over by a PC. Don't mind. You know, it's just fine. You know, just... Are you going to use Windows 7, though? I'm stuck with the old, you know, other things. Yes? That's there, but that's there. It doesn't mean it doesn't work. God's law still functions. So, therefore, you'll see is anything that if means however much you don't accept of the philosophy, you're going to have that much problem explaining what's going on. So, those philosophies that understand the eternal nature of the soul and accept reincarnation have a lot less to it. They can have God, they can have Him controlling the world. They can have the material energy, the jiva not part of it. He can be doing good work, getting good results, or be doing good work getting out of the material world, or, you know, some way trying to, you know, pull himself away from attachment, because doing good work means you have to be not attached to the results. So whether you want karma or jnana, it's the same process. But as soon as you drop out karma, then you have a lot of problems. I'm saying to explain. How do you explain why? If the point is you only have one life to get it together, then why is somebody born in a nice family, someone's not? Someone's rich, someone's not? Someone's religious, someone's not? That not one religionist in the world religious can explain, you know, unless they're Buddhist or something. But they can't explain this. Why? So, therefore, then it has a problem. So God's made some mistakes here, because it can't be our mistake, right? Because I'm so smart. So it's got to be God's problem. You know, and it is God's problem, because then His universe is, you know, running around it. There are all kinds of people that don't have an understanding of the philosophy. You know, so you could say it's His fault. He created them. Yeah, come on. You know. So, you know, so the problem comes back is to those. So in this is the less we, unless we accept, the more problems we're going to have coming up with answers. And therefore, the more anxiety we're going to have, because then there'll be that will be another aspect of illusion, because that's another thing that's not connected to the Lord. So besides our attachment, we're attached to, let's say, the family. We're not seeing it in relation to the Lord. It creates an anxiety. So then there's all kinds of suffering. Then on top of that, we don't accept these laws of God. Then we're going to have more suffering because we can't understand why these things are happening with the family and the interactions and this and that. So we just compound our suffering. So that's why then this point is the sincere student should have a firm respect for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a student was Arjuna. Right? So if we have that, then you can remove all the difficulties. Otherwise, it will be very difficult. Yes?
Actually, I was in a truck.
You were in a truck.
Yeah, I was in a truck once, and my brother-in-law was asked by his son, Daddy, what happens if a baby dies and he didn't yet meet Jesus? So the answer was, Jesus knew what he was going to do.
Jesus knew what he was going to do.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Jesus knew what he was going to do, so then why doesn't Jesus know about what everybody else is going to do? You know what I'm saying? So why is it only the baby? And is that all babies? You know, so therefore Jesus accepts all babies of all denominations from all castes and creeds and colors of the world.
It's patch up.
It's emotion. So it's nice because they want to establish that God's good and God's compassionate, but at the same time as they feel if someone doesn't, you know, follow the rules, you know, the observable rules, not the philosophy, the observable rules, then that's bad. And, you know, there should be no, for that bad, there should be no, how do you say?
Redemption.
Yeah, no redemption.
No.
I mean, of course, if they accept, then after that, that it's there. So it's really funny how, if you can do all nonsense and just accept and then everything works, then why would anyone be going to hell anyway? You know, especially why would one denomination be saying the other one's going to hell? Why is there a problem between the Catholics and the Protestants? You know, or within themselves, amongst each other, because they've all accepted Jesus, so therefore they're all going to be saved no matter whatever they've done. But each one thinks the other group's going to hell and only their group is the right one. You know what I'm saying? So it seems to be much more subjective. It's not actually dealing with the principle of understanding the philosophy. Right? So that's why one must inquire, why is all this going on? Because if that is there, then it works. You know what I'm saying? So it must be some common principle there. Okay. Yeah? Yes.
I asked for a question about this point that everyone's starting at different levels at the beginning. They only have one life to protect themselves. So someone maybe going to sign up for a deal and stuff like that. But they said that it's not...
They do quite well, generally.
Sorry?
So they do quite well.
but their point was that it's not that you have to achieve a certain level, but it's the value added. So it's where you've come from, how much improvement you do. So
how much improvement you do.
Yeah, so if you're born in a Christian family, then you've got more to achieve to get liberation or heaven or whatever, rather than if you came from a drug dealer family. So that's the one of the answers anyway.
Yeah. You're from Kerala?
Okay.
Are you from Kerala?
No.
Yes. So how do they define how someone has improved? You know, the priest, his father was a priest, and now he's a priest. So how much has he improved?
He got more donations.
You know what I'm saying? So the problem is what they're trying to do is make up. That's what I'm saying. It's the same principle as they are having to make up answers. You know, they may have some element of truth in it, but more of it is fabricated to answer questions on subject matters that they don't actually acknowledge exist. You know what I'm saying? If you accept karma, then very easily the whole thing works. You accept the eternality of the soul, the temporariness of the material world. Then all their aspects of philosophy, what they're trying to get, become so easy to explain. But because they avoid those, then they have to come up with all these answers. And that, in other words, they'll come up with these very clever statements. And they work very nicely. You know? They work very nicely. You know what I'm saying? But they work on sentiment. So that's the whole thing, is they have to push the sentiment, then they can come up with sentimental answers. Because there is no philosophy. In fact, it's very interesting. One devotee was telling me, he was speaking with one theologian in, you know, some particular, you know, monastic order. Can he not do the... Yes. Yeah, what is it? What do you call it? It's like on NASA or something like that. Yes, we have a launch. So, Walter Cronkite, you understand? You're, and so, he was this theologian was saying is that the principles of reincarnation, all these different things, they're taught to those who live in the monasteries. This was one, I don't know, maybe within his order or something, I don't know, but he was giving the idea that all those who live in the monasteries, who are the full-time, the theologians who actually study the scriptures, they know these things, but it's not taught to the common people because it's considered over their head. So it's just this policy, they don't teach it. And the unfortunate thing is the priests that preach in those don't know it either. So it's only a few people out sitting in some mountain somewhere in a cave, they actually know it.
Because if they read Origen was a Christian monk, at one point it became split into these two groups. One believed in reincarnation, but Constantinus, which was about to accept Christianity as a state religion, didn't want nothing to know about it, because the people would be lazy if he believed they have more life. So then the political side of the church decided to kill that idea. But theologian will read Origen because he's a famous Christian writer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's
like
why
that. Have that.
Okay. So then, okay. Lord Krishna descends specifically to reestablish the real purpose of life when man forgets that purpose. The mission of human form of life, then it is called dharmasya glanir, the disturbance of the occupation of the human being. Even then, out of many, many human beings who awaken, there may be one who actually enters the spirit of understanding his position. And for him, this Bhagavad Gita is spoken. Actually, we are all swallowed by the tigress of nescience. But the Lord is very merciful upon living entities, especially human beings. To this end, he spoke the Bhagavad Gita, making his friend Arjuna the student. Being an associate of Lord Krishna, Arjuna was above all ignorance. But Arjuna was put into ignorance on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, just to inquire, just to question Lord Krishna about the problems of life, so that the Lord could explain them for the benefit of future generations of human beings, to chalk out the plan of life. Then man could act accordingly and perfect the mission of human life. So in other words, he's in illusion, so he's in the position we're in, so that he can inquire, ask the questions that therefore could get us out of illusion. He's out of illusion, but he's put under by Yoga Maya, saying in illusion, so that he will act on our behalf and ask the questions that we would be asking. Right? So then, who's there? So, the Lord, out of his causeless mercy, then he establishes the Bhagavad Gita so that this purpose can be there, so we can become freed from this illusion. Right? So this is then will be that part. We're freed from the illusion, because we're in anxiety about that. So if we know we're freed from illusion, now we can talk about the positive, about developing love of God. Right? That'll come later. But the first thing to establish is this. Okay? Does that make sense? So then today is what?
Friday.
So on Monday then we'll start with the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita. Right. So that's gives five basic truths. Chit, achit, ishwara. And that means the Lord, the jiva, the material nature, time, and karma. Right. So everything is, these are the five subject matters of Gita. So now we'll go through a definition of those.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama, Rama Hare.
Prabhupada ki jai.